Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, glittering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one shot a weekend of training to get that bag.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/policeacademypodcast. With over 180,000 titles to choose from, you will have no trouble finding an audiobook to get hooked on. Your membership gets you one free book a month and a 30% discount on any additional purchases. And once you buy a book, and this is what I love about Audible, it's yours for life. That is unless you don't like it, in which case you can always return it for a different one. So go check them out by following the link in the show notes or going to audibletrial.com/policeacademypodcast. Hello, my lovely listeners. Welcome back to Police Academy Podcast. In this episode, I am going to walk you guys through a quote-unquote routine shift as an officer. Now, the big caveat here is that obviously this is unique to me personally, to my department, my region in the country and the world, but any officer really in the entire world can empathize with certain aspects of what I'm about to say. But the whole point here is that civilians especially, all they know of what cops do is when bad things happen, they show up, or I'm about to get pulled over and I don't want a ticket. I have no idea what cops actually do throughout the day or night as they're working their shift. You know, you watch Cops and you see these officers running around chasing bad guys, doing drug busts and all that fun stuff. But that's like 2% of what cops do. The other 98% is not exactly what you would expect. It's a lot of paperwork, but we'll get into that. So this episode is just all about the practical daily life of a cop on duty, and this is specific to day shift. I can do the same type of thing if you guys like this for night shift, so let me know. Hit me up on Facebook or Twitter. I am at Police Academy PC on Twitter, and then on Facebook it's just Police Academy Podcast. Send me a message, let me know if you like this type of show, and I can do one for night shift as well. Obviously I worked both, but this one is day shift. Let's do it. Our shift started at 6:30 in the morning, 0630 hours. We use military time. So I, depending on where I lived, for a while I lived in the city. So I got up at probably 5:30 in the morning. I had a cruiser in my driveway, easy peasy. All I had to do was be out in my cruiser by 6:30 on the radio calling in service. That is after we got rid of roll call. We did for quite a few years while I was on the police department, have a roll call where you actually had to go to a general assembly area, meet with the rest of your shift, and you had to be there by shift start at 6:30. So when that was the case, I had to be up even earlier. And then when we moved out of the city, I had a 25-30 minute drive. So I was getting up at 4:30, 5 o'clock. Okay, so I get up, eat breakfast, do my hair, put on a uniform. It's about 20 pounds of gear with the vest, ballistic plate that I wore. The gun belt is most of that weight. On my gun belt, I had obviously a gun, two spare magazines, handcuffs, a collapsible baton, pepper spray, and I think that's it. Oh, of course, my radio. Can't forget that. Probably the most important thing on there. My radio, which looks like a cell phone from the 1990s. It was huge, 1980s. When did cell phones come out? I don't even know. Those big, blocky, you know, super heavy radios that look like you could call your distant cousin in Australia from. I mean, these things are massive. That's everything that was on my gun belt. These things are really heavy. There's actually an underbelt that goes through the physical loops in your uniform pants, and it has Velcro on it. This is the style I wore. That has Velcro on the outside of it, and then your actual gun belt that people see has sticky, the other half of the Velcro on the inside of it, so it helps your belt kind of stay up around your waist because it has so much weight on it. If that wasn't there, your belt would sag. And then you have belt keepers, which are little thin leather straps with buttons on them that wrap around both belts, the inner and outer belt, and you button them together so that, again, it helps prevent your belt from sagging. Not that officers' belts don't sag, especially the bigger guys tend to have this issue. You see their belts kind of hanging low in the back or whatever. There's a lot of weight on there, so it's hard to keep your belt looking good at times, but there's a lot of weight on your hips and on your back. But that is the process. In the morning, put all that stuff on. Most of the time I was with the PD, I was wearing a Class A style uniform, so I actually had a physical hard metal badge, not like a patch that you see with a lot of officers now. I also had a metal nameplate with little backers that held it on. And that thing was the bane of my existence as an officer. Those stupid nameplate things ripped off all the time. You get in your cruiser, you put your seatbelt on, it's gone. Take your seatbelt off, it's gone. Brush up against something, it's gone. And the hard thing wasn't dealing with the backer, or sorry, the hard thing wasn't dealing with the plate itself, where it had my last name and my, when I started as an officer, it said serving since 2009. It was finding the stupid backers because they would fall inside your uniform and you're looking, you know, at the top of your belt inside your shirt, checking to see if it fell down through your pants. Could be in your cruiser, could be outside the cruiser. Those things were hard to find. So you always had to have spare backers for your nameplate because that thing was always coming off. And I don't know why we don't have a better solution for that issue. It's ridiculous. You'd think by now, all the years that cops have been being cops, we'd come up with something better. And there are magnetic ones and other solutions that don't work any better. Those things fall off too. The only real solution to me was having an embroidered name on your uniform, not an actual metal nameplate. And there are lots of departments that do have that type of uniform. I actually did wear that style uniform a lot because I was a bike patrol officer as well. So I had a soft badge, just a badge patch embroidered onto that uniform with an embroidered name. So I didn't have to deal with the backer nameplate issue all the time. The bike uniform was way more comfortable, so I wore that as much as I could. But in the winter, when it's snowing, I'm not going to be hauling a bike around on the back of my cruiser. So I was in my Class A, and that was a pain. Okay, so now we're to about 6:30 in the morning. I have called in service. Depending on what district I was, it sounded like 7:13. My radio dispatcher would say, 7:13, go ahead. And I would say, Officer 261, driving Cruiser 622, in service. And then I would switch to my portable radio and say 713 portable. So when I initially call in service, I'm telling the dispatcher, hey, this is who I am. This is my district. This is what cruiser I'm driving. And I do that all on my mobile, the actual radio attached to the cruiser. And then I would switch over and say, this is my portable, so that they can make sure both radios are working before you get into your shift. The dispatcher is putting that all into a computer system so that when calls come out, they know, you know, who you are, where you're at, what cruiser you're driving, etc. All right. Now, moving on to the morning hours. The mornings were the slowest part of the day for a few reasons. Number one, everyone is going to work. So if you're getting a call in the morning, a lot of times it's an accident because it's rush hour. But the dopers are still asleep. And a lot of the people who may have actually realized they've been victimized overnight say they come out to their car, find out that someone rummaged through it, busted a window, stole a bunch of crap out of it, or they left their garage door open and their mower's missing, whatever it is. They have to go to work still. So oftentimes they just jump in their car, go to work, and they don't report that until they get home. So the morning was the slowest part of the day. A lot of times I would just go out and stay visible for traffic purposes, kind of remind everyone that, hey, you know, we're out here, drive safe. I would run traffic, obviously, if necessary, if someone blew a red light or was going way too fast, whatever. Make a traffic stop or two, just send that message that, hey, we're out here. Obviously, if you need us, call us, but I'm going to stop you if you do something stupid. Obviously, coffee became a staple of my days as a day shift officer. I am no good at going to bed early. I'm a night owl, so naturally, I never got enough sleep as a day shift officer. And coffee was what got me through the day. Without coffee, I would have just fallen asleep. I literally would have fallen asleep in my cruiser. There were some really, really rough days because it's just you're getting up really early. You work hard all day. It can be usually more mentally exhausting than physically. But if you don't get to bed on time, which I never did, you definitely need a good cup of joe. Fortunately, most gas stations will provide that as a courtesy to police officers. Now, I know everyone has a different opinion on this. Mine is that, listen, cops don't get a whole lot of perks come with the job. And I'm not complaining. I had great benefits, love the job, but you don't really get enough benefits to offset the stuff you deal with and go through as an officer. So if somebody wants to give me a free coffee as a way to increase officer presence in that area in their business, great. That shows me that they are okay with officers being in their business. And they like having officers, especially in gas stations that tend to be the target of robberies. They like having officers coming in there as frequently as possible. That's awesome. Now, the fear there is that if something happens and maybe the owner or the cashier or whatever at that business is doing something wrong, that the cops are going to overlook it, that this can act as a sort of bribe, which I understand that perspective. At the same time, the free coffee wasn't going to make me treat the cashier at the gas station any differently. And realize that this was usually a company-wide policy. I did try to pay for my coffee until I just got tired of trying. And usually the issue was, no, this is a company policy. Officers do not pay for their drinks. Now, if you walk in and you want a Twinkie, you got to pay for that. But if it comes from the coffee machine or the pop machine, you couldn't pay for it. They wouldn't let you. You know, every once in a while, I would just lay cash if I ever had it on the counter and walk out. So they couldn't not take it just because, I don't know, I felt bad never paying for anything. But again, this was a company-wide policy. Even the cashiers, oftentimes you could tell, didn't really like cops, but they would still tell you, no, we can't. You can't pay for it. Officers get complimentary coffee or pop or whatever. And I'm not going to push back too hard on that again because I needed coffee every morning, and that small little perk was something that I appreciated. So, yeah, it kept me awake and kept me alert, so I appreciated that. I usually went to the local Buc-ee's, good old Buc-ee's. Anyways, rolling on to midday. Coffee carried you into lunchtime part of the day. Starting at about 10 or 11, officers start taking their lunch breaks. We had hour-long lunch breaks. We got paid. We were on the clock for lunch, which was great. You only have to work, well, we actually work 12-hour shifts, but you're getting paid for all 12 hours. And that's awesome. But the reason for that is you can get called off your lunch break. You are available as an officer. You are still on duty. Something can happen and you could completely not get lunch at all, depending on how the day goes. Now, that was rare with my department. With others that are more busy, I could see that being a more frequent occurrence. But as midday rolls around, officers, you know, start taking their lunch breaks, which means if you're not on lunch, you're filling in for officers that are on lunch. Call comes out in the neighboring district and he's on lunch or she's on lunch break, you've got to go take that call. So, and that's right when things start to pick up. People find out their car was broken into, find out someone smacked their mailbox with a crowbar, their yard gnome's gone, whatever it is. They're not at work, they start calling. And some people, for whatever reason, seem to think that the police department is only open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So day shift, aside from the fact that this is the normal time when people would report these things, also gets calls and reports for stuff that should have been reported at other times on night shift or over the weekend. But during the week is when people report the stuff because they just, I don't know, they don't think about it and go, oh, wait, it's the police. They're always available. So they report it during the week, during day hours. So usually if the coffee got me through the morning, calls start coming in and that is going to keep me busy through the middle of the day. Sometimes it was slow still. Sometimes it got pretty busy in the middle of the day. It just depends. And just like it completely depends on what department you work for, in what part of the country, as far as what your routine day looks like, it also depends on what part of the city, in my case, you work in. You know, one district might be all residential, middle, upper class residential. So you're not going to have the same type of call as you're going to have in the old part of the city where you've got low income housing, you've got trailer parks, you know, some cities, you've got the inner city, the projects, that kind of stuff. The call type in these different parts of the city are completely different. You're going to have mailboxes, theft, lots of property crime in middle-class neighborhoods. You're going to have a lot more violent crime, drugs, domestic violence, that kind of stuff in the lower-income areas. And then again, it depends on what the demographic is there. It's trailer parks and low-income whites or Hispanics, which they tend to separate by those groups. There's one trailer park in my jurisdiction that was, you know, heavily Hispanic. One was, you know, just Caucasian whites. And then the black section of the community was in a different part of the city, more in apartment style complexes and that kind of stuff. So it all depends on, you know, what the demographic is in your district. For example, one district had Walmart. So during the day, you can expect, if you have that district, to take a whole lot of shoplifting calls because Walmart, at least in our city, was pretty serious about loss prevention. And as you can imagine, people steal from Walmart, of all places, constantly. It's not whether or not theft is taking place, it's whether or not they get caught. For example, we didn't get called to Target hardly at all, but that's because they didn't have a solid loss prevention team at the store. People are stealing from Target all the time. They're just not catching them. So if you have Walmart in your district, you're going to take a lot of shoplifting calls. If you are on night shift and you've got a bunch of bars in your district, depending on the type of establishment it is, you might be getting sent to a lot of disturbances at the bars. You might have a lot of DUI accidents or just plentiful DUI stops to be made throughout the shift. So it all depends on what is in your jurisdiction. But regardless of where in the city you work, how busy you are in the middle of the day, what's going on, there's one thing that is true, at least in my experience, and that is that your lunch break is sacred. Yes, you can get called off of it if things get really crazy, but the sky literally has to be falling in for, this is the way it was with my department, for you to get called off your lunch break. You just don't let one of your coworkers miss their lunch break unless there's no other option. And this also went to like trying to get to lunch because, you know, officers would either eat at their home if they lived in the city, they would get food and then take it to a station or a firehouse and eat there. And it just, almost without fail, you would pick up your Subway, Chipotle, whatever. And the second you place the order, the radio kicks off and says, 7:13. And that's you. And it's like, here we go. And they're sending you to a report call or whatever it is. But you're already committed to lunch. You've already ordered your food. You have it in your car. You're headed to wherever you're going to eat. And your coworkers should know that because they know, at least the shift that I worked, we knew what time we were going to lunch. We had kind of a schedule. So if it was 10, almost to 10 o'clock, a little after, they knew that this officer is going to lunch. And if he's getting sent somewhere, your coworker should be jumping on saying, hey, you want me to get that for you? I know you're headed to lunch soon. Or, hey, are you going to lunch? Yes. Okay, I'll get it for you. That's what a good shift does for each other, because it sucks to think you're about to have a little bit of a break, get to go eat, and plan on that time of day when you're used to that time of day eating lunch, and then just having it get shafted because you get sent on a radio call right when you're headed there. So it happened all the time. If you've got good coworkers as an officer, you typically, you know, they would take care of you. But if you've got lazy coworkers who don't want to take report calls, that might not necessarily be the case. Or especially if a child abuse call, or even more so, a rape call comes out and it's for you and they know you're heading to lunch, crickets on the radio. No one wants to take that call for you. There is a threshold where even good coworkers just aren't going to take that bullet. They're not going to jump in front of that bus for you. And it's sad. It might sound bad to some that officers don't want to take child abuse calls and rescue those poor kids from that situation, or, you know, a rape call or whatever. That's not the case. They're just not fun. They're not fun calls to deal with. You get in there and you do your best and you really try to, you know, protect that victim, do the best investigation you can, but they are tough calls. And oftentimes you're not going to have a coworker jump that call for you. All right, moving on. So I got through lunch and I'm back out on the road. The afternoon from like 3 to 6, 7 or so is the busiest part of the day. This is when all the dopers wake up and start causing problems. Shopliftings kick off. Traffic accidents start to pile up because it's the afternoon rush hour and things tend to get a little bit crazy. Now, the problem with that is you are trying to get off at, in our case, 6:30, and these calls can't just wait around for night shift to get there. So at the time when you really need to go sit down and work on reports or paperwork that you picked up throughout the day, you're out there handling new calls as quickly as you can because they're stacking up. Getting off on time was difficult. not only do you have to get off whatever call you're on at the end of the shift, which is tricky at best, you also have to have any important reports done. So if you had an arrest throughout the day, a child abuse report, domestic violence, anything like that, that needs to be filed before you go home, once you get done with whatever call you were on, no matter what time it was, even if it's 8:30 before you get done with a call and you were supposed to be off 2 hours ago, you have to go back to the station and finish those reports and turn them in before you go home. And that includes evidence. Evidence always has to be logged before you leave because of chain of custody. Sorry, you can't just leave it in your cruiser because then you can't confirm later on that it hadn't been tampered with. You have to take it directly to the station, log it in before you go home. So that was probably one of the worst parts about being a day shift officer, aside from just all the reports, was just knowing that there's no guarantee that you're ever going to get off on time. You're always running your tail off at the end of the shift. And for me personally, this creates a big conflict of interest because I don't feel like officers should be rushed when dealing with the public. They are there to help people, to take those reports, do good investigations, and you should be able to take your time. But even with a department like mine, where I feel like we had pretty good resources, we weren't always stacked up on calls like a lot of these big departments were or are. At the end of the day, you are. Calls are almost always stacked up. You're trying to get off on time. So the priority, unfortunately, was, okay, let's knock this out, get it done, and get home. That's just the reality of it. And obviously, that's not ideal if you want the people, the citizens of your community, to get the best service from their officers. You don't want guys that are worried about just getting off because they have been there since 6:30 in the morning and it's 9 o'clock at night. That's not the most ideal situation. I know my department had a swing shift for a while that would come in during those hours in hopes that the day shift guys could focus on their stuff, get everything done and go home on time, and the night shift guys weren't coming into as much chaos. But the entire time I worked there, we didn't have that. And I would have loved to experience that shift, that swing shift, because I think actually would have loved to work it. But anyways, the retired on duty guys also don't help in getting off on time. I know that's probably not a familiar term for a lot of you, if you're civilians especially. The old guys that just come to work every day with the primary goal of not doing anything are called retired on duty. They have been there for 20 plus years. They have absolutely no ambitions to ever get promoted. They're not going to make any more money. They're on the clock and they're just there. And don't get me wrong, these guys are experienced. Some of them are great when it comes to, a lot of them are really good when it comes to the high stress situations, because they have been there over and over and over again. They're good with use of force, all that stuff. In a pinch, they're helpful. But on day shift, most of what you do is pretty mundane. It's reports, accidents, whatever. And those guys are experts at avoiding any of that work. Their full-time job is to not do work. And especially at the end of the day, when things get really crazy, these guys are unashamed about the fact that they're basically throwing all of their coworkers under the bus so that they will get off on time and that they don't have to take reports. How? Well, I'll give you a couple examples. Assisting other officers on calls where they're absolutely not needed. These guys act like, hey, if I'm not quote unquote in service, which means that they're just out in their cruiser available for calls, they think that if they're not in service, that when a call comes out, it doesn't apply to them, even if it's in their district, which is totally not the case. If your district has a call and you aren't taking a report or you're not on lunch, it's your call. It doesn't matter if you're backing somebody up. That's not always true. If you're backing somebody up and it's an important deal and they need you there, that's one thing. But if you just showed up and said, hey, I'm out with this other officer on a traffic stop or just a regular report call, it doesn't mean that you're not available for other calls. But that's what these guys do. They're always assisting another officer. Or there's one officer in particular that I worked with a lot that loved to do this. He wouldn't run traffic or do anything officer initiated all day long, aside from stop out at his, I won't say that because then people that know him will know who I'm talking about. But he didn't do anything officer initiated all day long until the last hour of the shift. And then it was nonstop, constant traffic stops, as if all of a sudden he got this, well, it wouldn't be a second wind because he never had a first one. So he got a wind of sorts and all of a sudden was a gung-ho traffic officer. And what that did was take him out of service. A traffic stop, for the most part during the day, is not going to result in any real paperwork. You might write a warning or a ticket, but that you just throw in the bin at the end of the day and go home. And especially if you're not looking for drugs or guns or drunks or whatever, which you're not going to see very many drunks this time of day. If you're not looking for that stuff, you're not hunting for it, you're not going to find it even if it's there. So what he's doing is basically doing a really easy thing, routine traffic stop, as a way to make sure that he doesn't get sent to a call. And these traffic stops would take 20 minutes or more. And that's absolutely ridiculous. For a normal traffic stop, it should be 10 minutes, give or take. If you're proficient, you can do it in 7 or even less if you're really rushing it, but that's not advisable. But if it takes more than 15 minutes, there's something wrong and there's something going on. It's more than just a traffic stop now. And these stops would just drag on and on and on. And what he's doing is making the stop, releasing the car, doing all his paperwork, and then calling back in service. And oftentimes, he wouldn't call in service until he had another stop waiting for him. You know, he saw a violation or whatever, and he'd go in service with a warning, and I'm traffic. So there's literally no chance he's going to get sent on a call. And the reason I'm doing this episode is because I want people to understand that cops are working in a field, a career field, just like everybody else. When you're doing the same job every day, the things that you are concerned about aren't what the public sees. You know, the public is looking at all these things that the media wants them to look at as far as cops are concerned. But the officers, you know, in those shoes, the guys going to work every day, are thinking about these kinds of things. Hey, am I going to get my lunch today? Hey, that a-hole coworker of mine just shafted me because he knows I'm busy and didn't take that call for me. You know, is the union contract going to go well? Are we going to get the time off that we've been requesting for 10 years or the pay raise that we haven't gotten for the last 5? Again, I'm not complaining. My department was really good on all that stuff, but I'm just trying to illustrate that cops aren't thinking about all the stuff that the media and society is so concerned about because, number one, cops understand it at a level that everyone else doesn't, but they have their own stuff to worry about. They have families and, you know, contracts with the city or the county sheriff's office, the state patrol office, whatever it is. They've got all these other things that are important to them. And a lot of times, that's what they're focused on. And this is another example, just the day-to-day stuff that cops deal with. A lot of it's just, especially on day shift, is frustration from whether it's a dispatcher that doesn't know what, usually it's a she, is doing, or a coworker that's just lazy and you're picking up all of his reports. These are the things that cops deal with. Aside from the fact that, you know, they're fixing society's problems and dealing with, you know, people hating them just for being in uniform, you've got all this stuff going on behind the scenes too. So that's why I wanted to do this show, just because there's a lot going on that people don't see. All right, so moving on to toward the end of the shift, all reports, again, had to be turned in if they're an important report. Domestic violence arrests, child abuse neglect, log your evidence, all that stuff. So whenever you get done with whatever call you're on, regardless of the time of day, or how far over your shift you are, you had to go back to the station, turn in all your paperwork, do your narratives, which we dictated. So I would talk into a recorder and say, this is Officer Terrence Herrick with the Bellevue Police Department. Gosh, I don't even know my routine anymore. It's been so long. But and then I would explain the report, whatever happened, the entire thing. And then that would get sent to a lady who would type it all up. And when I got back to work the next day or the day after, whenever I came in next, I would review the report they typed out, edit it, add stuff, delete stuff, make sure it was correct, and then file that report. I would, at the end of the shift, turn in my taser and my defibrillator. We all had one in our cruiser. I think every police department should have defibs in their cruisers. My sister died when she was 17 because we didn't have a defib. And they are affordable enough. You can get the funding usually privately to get them. You can get grants for them. There's no reason that cruisers shouldn't have defibs in them. They're super easy to use. Training on them, super easy. So we would turn those in at the end of the shift because the other shift would use the same ones. And then I'd head home or to wherever I parked my cruiser and call off duty. 7:13, I'm off duty. I'm making that call sign up. I work different districts, but that's what it sounded like. Whatever district you were, call at your district, off duty. Dispatcher confirms that she, you know, heard you, and you're done. At that point, take a deep breath and go, I made it through another day, and begin. I did like when we lived outside the city, the drive time home. Again, it was like a 25-30 minute drive, and that gave me time to kind of decompress, shut cop brain off, try to not erase, but get the visuals out of my head that I picked up throughout the day. You know, the visual of that husband and father of three hanging in his garage. That's hard to come home with and be a present and good father and husband. So having that drive home helped me kind of get that stuff out of my head if I could. I wasn't always able to do that. Probably the first thing I did when I got to my own car was pry my bulletproof vest away from my body, which is always wet. They do not breathe at all. So you're literally sweating from the time you put it on till when you get off, with the exception of winter when it's really cold out. But if it's not freezing out, you're sweating underneath your vest. So I pry that off, dry out a little bit, cool off. Just try to shut my mind, shut my cop brain off. So I didn't get home and start ordering around my kids and wife and make them wonder what happened to daddy. And then try to figure out, you know, what do I share when I get home? When my wife asks me, how was your day? What am I going to tell her? Some days nothing happened and then there's not a whole lot to talk about. Some days were really crazy and good stories. And not something that would really bother her to hear. But some of the stuff you go through, a lot of the stuff you see, isn't something you really want, or at least I really wanted to share with my wife. Because she didn't sign up to be a cop. I did. And that's for a reason. She doesn't want to know about the guy that just shot himself in the head, or the 13-year-old girl that just got raped by her dad, or that 33-year-old guy. She doesn't want to know about all that stuff. And she, although she wants to be able to help her husband process that stuff and just not bottle it up inside, there's a balance, and it's a tough one to figure out. And it all depends on whoever that is, your significant other, if you have one. I think I've said this before, but I think every police officer has to have someone to share this stuff with, because you have to talk about it. And just a lot of times we deal with it just with humor, which, people see cops as very cold and jaded, and most of them are, because they've seen a whole bunch of crap, and it's hard to see things as sunshine and rainbows and roses when you've seen what you've seen over and over and over again. You've seen the worst of what humanity has to offer, and regardless of how well you deal with that, you have someone to talk to about it, whatever. The natural response is to just become a little bit jaded and just begin to not have so much hope in humanity, because every time you see these terrible things happen, it destroys that hope. And this is why you see the law enforcement community, part of why the law enforcement community is so tight. They're the only people you can openly and candidly talk to about what you're going through, what you've seen, the stuff that you do every day, that understand it without you having to explain every little detail. And they understand what it's like. They've seen the same stuff. Maybe they were there with you. So it's very therapeutic for officers to talk with that coworker about whatever call they just went on, because it gets it out. A lot of times you laugh and joke about terrible things, but it is therapy, and it's not for the public to see. It's just not, because the public can't understand it. Until you've done that job and you've seen those things from that viewpoint, you can't understand how a cop can joke about, some guy offing himself, or how someone died tragically. For example, a coworker of mine and I and our wives were going out of town one weekend, and we just as we were leaving town, we went by this fire, and it was a truck that was on fire. And I have video of it. And when I went back, I realized after the fact that it had just started when we came upon it. So the driver of the truck was still in there, and again, which we didn't realize initially, but he was alive, right? So my coworker and I, we pull over, we get out, and this wreck is on the opposite side of the interstate, so we couldn't get to it, but we got close enough to where we could yell at the people who were at the accident scene. Now, this truck is on fire. One guy's got a little fire extinguisher. He's trying to put it out. The fire doesn't care. It's a diesel fire, and it's growing rapidly. As this thing goes on, we start to realize, okay, there is someone still in that truck. But it didn't matter, because this truck was going up really fast, and there was nothing these people could do about it. Absolutely nothing. So we're yelling at these people to get away from the truck, because it's got 100-plus gallon diesel fuel tanks on it that are surrounded by flames. Probably not the best situation to be very close to. So, you know, we're yelling at these people, get away from the truck. Literally, someone is burning alive in front of our eyes. And fire department shows up. This guy is a goner. We walk back to the car and get in and start driving like nothing happened. And then we started making jokes about it. I don't remember what we said, but we're joking about someone who 30 seconds before was alive, and we literally watched him burn in front of our eyes. I mean, we couldn't see him in the truck because it was on its side, so we never saw the guy. We never heard him, you know, crying for help or anything. But it never even occurred to us that we were making jokes about someone's death in a very tragic and painful one, because it's so natural when you deal with that stuff all the time that it doesn't, at some point, doesn't really click that, like, okay, hey, I'm making jokes about something that you almost can't joke about. But it's so common. It's so natural for officers to do that. And I don't think it is because the culture is that way. I think, you know, is it the chicken or the egg that came first? Is it the culture that drives that humor, or is it something innate within us such that the culture is the way it is? I don't have the answer to that. But, you know, with our wives there, we kind of had a smack in the face because they're like eyes wide open, mouth wide open, in shock, and trying not to cry. In fact, I know one of them was crying. And then that was kind of our, like, oh crap, like, what are we doing? They're not used to this, and we're terrible. What are we doing joking about this stuff? Someone just died. But it's normal for a cop. You deal with death, whether it was self-inflicted or inflicted by someone else. You deal with that stuff all the time. You know, people see these videos of someone getting shot, and the police go and handcuff them and then stand around and wait for an ambulance and go, that's terrible. They're not saving his life. They don't care about him. All this stuff. And it's not that the officers have anything against the person, but they see this all the time. And especially when it comes to gang violence, where these guys are constantly shooting each other up. And it kind of comes with the territory. You join a gang and you might get shot because you're in a gang. And the other gang, that's kind of what they do. You guys shoot each other. So, I didn't deal with this as much. But I've heard this perspective voiced by officers who work in gangland. And they've shown up to enough of these calls with these gang members bleeding out. And you can tell, okay, it's not like a six-year-old kid that's been shot and is bleeding. It's a teenager to a mid-20s guy who's clearly a gang member. You can tell by the tats and what they're wearing, it's not racist. If you're covered in gang tats and you're wearing 90% of your clothes are red or blue and you've got a handkerchief hanging out of your back pocket, the safe assumption is you're in a gang. And the officer showing up to that shooting and you're laying there bleeding out, those officers, because they've been there so many times, aren't so inclined to risk their own lives, risk picking up a bloodborne disease, trying to save your life when you chose that path. And that's the way they see it. Again, that's not necessarily how I see it. I didn't deal with it enough to get to that point. If I showed up and someone needed medical assistance, I was going to provide it. It didn't matter who they were, why they were in need of it, if they shot themselves, if they were a gang member, whatever. I'm going to try to help them. But that's not how all officers see it, and I don't blame them, because I get what this stuff can do to you over time when you've seen it over and over and over, and you just see how hopeless these situations seem. So that's a long-winded way of explaining. These are the things that I was driving home with in my brain that I had to try to figure out. What do I share with my wife when I get home? Or is it just, nothing special when she asked how my day was? And then, you know, you're home and it's regular life. You're a dad, a mom, husband, wife, whatever it is, friend, family member. Life is life. You're a normal person when you're off duty. Unfortunately, everyone introduces you as so-and-so, he's a cop, but I don't know why that is. But other than that, it's normal life. And you rinse and repeat, you go to bed, you wake up, and you do it all over again. Now, as I'm sitting here, just finishing this up, I feel like that was pretty boring, and I hope it wasn't, but I'm not a showman. What it is what you're going to get from me. And it is boring. Being a cop is extremely boring most of the time. Like I said, what you see on cops is 2%. The other 98% is mundane, is boring, involves lots of paperwork, lots of red tape. Everything is about covering your butt, making sure that if someone makes a false accusation, you're covered. If you made an arrest, that every possible loophole has been filled. You know, you talk about DUIs. DUI world is the land of loopholes, because there's so much money for defense attorneys in that area. They found every loophole that there ever was. And your job as an officer is not only to make a good arrest, but make sure that person is not going to get off if they hire a good attorney and find one of those thousands of loopholes. So yeah, it is kind of boring, to be honest. And again, the big caveat here is it depends on where you go. If you're in a big department with lots of crime that is typically very understaffed, you've got calls stacked up from the time you kick in service to the time you go home. And again, those might all be boring report calls, but you're busy all day long, which wasn't always the case at my department. Some days that was true, but I'd say a majority of the days we had at least some lulls in the action throughout the day, which is nice. Lets you catch up on paperwork and prepare for the storm that inevitably is going to come. All right, guys, that is it for this one. At the end of this, I feel like that was kind of boring, but that is the reality, especially for a day shift officer. It's not all run and gun. A lot of it is paperwork. A lot of it is taking reports and accidents and just dealing with that kind of stuff, fighting to stay awake because you got up at 5 in the morning and you didn't get to bed on time. The same struggles that we all have. I wanted to kind of paint that picture for you guys. So I hope I did that well. If you guys have questions, of course, you can always find me on Facebook or Twitter, Police Academy PC on Twitter. If you Google Police Academy Podcast, you will figure out how to get a hold of me. But yeah, if I didn't answer something or I talked about something, but you have questions about it or just missed something altogether, please ask. I can do a follow-up episode and I can do one on night shift if you guys want that to happen. Thanks, guys. I will see you next time. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.